Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air, featuring influencers, creatives, and thought leaders in the Twin Cities. And now, here is our host, Steve LeBall.
And welcome to Synapse Think Tank of the Air. I'm your host, Steve LeBall, and we're here today with three creators. We have with us a filmmaker, Nick Roseth. We have two authors. We have Roma Kalatayud Stocks, who wrote Symphony of Rivals, a novel, and a children's book, the co-author Monica Habia, who wrote it with Artika Tyner, and it's called Amazing Africa A to Z. So let's go around one by one and tell me what caused you to become a creator, the creative person that you have become. Start with Monica.
Yeah. So I'm Monica. What actually made me to write this book, actually, this is my first book, so I'm really excited for this journey. But it was just because of the questions that I was being asked about Africa. I'm originally from Africa, so I'm from Ghana, West Africa. People are like, tell me about Africa. I mean, they've heard so many stories about it, but some of them haven't been there. So they're like, we want to know. And I have people who also have come with me. So I'm just coming back from Africa. 2 weeks ago, Ghana, and I took so many people with me. So it has been an amazing journey on this book.
Boy, because so many people have their stereotypes of what Africa is.
Yes.
And the first thing they think is, oh, you must have elephants and giraffes on your just down the block from you.
Exactly. So it was different having people come with me from the Twin Cities. I have about 12 people that came with me from the Twin Cities this trip, and going into Ghana, staying there for 2 weeks, and just moving across, having fun on the beach, going to the museums, and learning something about Ghana, which is in Africa, was super cool.
And now you're back in Minnesota.
Yes.
What a strange adventure that is.
It is. But it's good to be back. Minnesota is my second home now. So.
Ah. Mm-hmm. Well, good. Good. You have multiple homes.
Yes.
And Roma, how are you doing? Where did your book come from? Is this your first novel?
No, this is actually my second novel, and it's the second book in a trilogy. It's a historical novel that takes place in the years leading up to World War II in Germany and Austria and Italy and the United States. And it really, I would say that the source of inspiration came from my work in working in the arts for the last 20 years. And I was really interested in creating work that would highlight the contributions of many cultures through the arts as a way to create bridges, as a way to create understanding, and as a way to eliminate stereotypes about different countries.
Okay, the same thing that Monica's up to.
With a different approach.
Right. Well, you have like 200 more pages. that's part of the approach. And then Nick Roseth, how did you become a creator? I don't think that's your original profession, is it?
No, I'm in the tech space. But I would say I've been a creator kind of all my life, you know, back in the old days drawing, and then I spent a lot of time in music, writing music and creating in that space. And I think that I really kind of need to be creating. Looking at film as a medium is kind of that crossover of the audio and the visual and storytelling and narrative. And documentary got started when I was part of this community and I started to appreciate it more and more. And then I became an advocate for it. And I saw the opportunity to tell a really cool story that, that quite frankly, most people don't know about, which is that we have a really amazing entrepreneurial community here in Minnesota. So that's kind of, I saw the gap and I saw the opportunity to create a story and really pushed myself to find ways to make that story interesting so people could be educated on it.
So that's what we have in common. There are people out there that don't know about things and we need insiders to let them know. I mean, I don't know much about the tech space. I've never been to Africa. And I wasn't around in the pre-World War II Europe. So what do I know? And what people do is, when they first developed the mass communications studies in the early 20th centuries, they tried to figure out what value or what harm that comes from movies and things. And it's good and bad, because if you've never been somewhere, all you know is what you see in the movies or on TV or in the radio or what you hear your friends. And a lot of that can be distorted. So, Monica, I think probably there's more ignorance about Africa than everything else put together.
Right.
Because, historically, the dark continent, which is like unknown. It's a, in the map, it would just like be a big gaping hole. Right. But it's huge. There's, the second largest continent?
In the world, yeah. It is the second largest with 54 countries. So, I mean, I have people ask me, like, you are from Africa. I'm like, yeah, but I'm from Ghana, just one of the 54 countries in the continent. So yes, there is many misconceptions about it, but I think this book is not just a children's book. Even adults can learn about it.
I read it.
Yeah, you read it. When we're in Little Africa, I had somebody help me to pronounce, help them to pronounce some of the words. So I think it was really amazing that even adults are getting to the book.
Well, right, because there's so much we don't know.
Exactly.
And we learn. But yet, American culture, I mean, if you take the African out of it, there's a lot going to be missing. You would miss rock and roll and blues and jazz and not to mention a lot of popular theater,
right,
and things.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our language, a lot of our approaches. Even jazz improvisation is a thing of its own that's kind of contrary to a lot of the old European modes. I mean, I remember reading that Mozart and Beethoven, they would improvise when they were, you know, at home doodling around, but then they'd write it down, and then you had to play exactly note for note. I got frozen in after that. So I see you have a quote, Roma, of Beethoven in the front of your book?
I do.
Do you remember it, or do I have to look it up?
Why don't you read it, and then I'll tell you why Beethoven is such an important character in the book.
All right. Music is the one incorporeal, did I pronounce that?
Yes.
Incorporeal,
yes.
Entrance into the higher world of knowledge, which comprehends mankind, but which mankind cannot comprehend. Ooh, now that's deep.
Yes, that's very deep.
I mean, mankind can't comprehend it, but Beethoven can.
Right. So let me tell you a little bit. So the story of A Symphony of Rivals is the story of Alejandra Morrison, who pursues her dream of becoming a symphonic conductor at an unfortunate time when music and the arts are falling under the influence of Nazism. But through her devotion to music and Beethoven's legacy, she finds a measure of hope and strength. So when I was doing the research for the book, because I did a lot of research on a lot of musicians, I wanted to highlight a German composer who was unique, obviously not only because of his musical genius, but Beethoven came to the forefront because of his love of humanity. So his character in the book sort of plays against what's happening with Nazism, with the ideologies that are happening with Nazism. So he's kind of like the moral compass that guides, you know, and inspires Alejandra throughout the story, throughout her time in Berlin, Germany, and in Austria and in other places. So And the reason also for choosing music, as music is a big part of the book, is because I feel that music is transcendental.
What do you mean transcendental?
Well, for instance, you think about all these terrible things, dark periods in history like World War II. But yet today, we can enjoy the legacy of many artists who created their work, you know, maybe 100 years ago, 200 years ago, and we enjoying them. It has, their music has transcended time. It brings people together, and it brings people together not just within this world today, but across time. That's why I believe that music is transcendental, and that's why I believe that music was so important to highlight in the book. So readers get the opportunity to, each chapter in the book is titled with a musical composition that is part of the story, that either is inspiration of the characters or, and so readers also get the opportunity to listen to the music, kind of do offer a multimedia opportunity for them to read the book, and if they want to listen to the music.
So as you come to each chapter, you can put on a different...
Yes.
I was going to say a different cut, but that's old-fashioned recordings.
They can, yes. And I think the inspiration came, I'm also a composer, so for my first book, I included a CD with my own original compositions that goes with the narrative. In the second book, I included a couple of my compositions, but also, again, highlighting the contributions of other composers, including women composers, and not just classical music, but anything from jazz to opera to classical and to just popular music. So a lot happening.
I'm one of those guys, I cannot think of a single woman composer.
Oh,
wasn't that terrible?
Yeah, Fanny Mendelssohn, for instance.
Fanny Mendelssohn?
Yes.
Like her husband was the other Mendelssohn?
No, it was her brother. It was her brother.
Oh,
it
Felix
was her brother.
And Fanny.
Yes, Felix and Fanny.
Wow.
And in fact, she wrote over 400 compositions, but many times they had to be either recorded or presented by her brother just because of the times. But I also highlight not just women composers, but women conductors, but also men composers and men conductors, including obviously Mozart and Beethoven.
Wow. Well, I suppose that's one advantage of film is you can just put the music in there as part of the soundtrack.
Yes.
And
yes.
It can set the mood for better or for worse. You can tell what's going to happen. But I don't know, how much drama do you have in your documentary?
There's not a lot of drama, but I, coming from a huge love of music and writing music myself,
You're a creator in that aspect, too.
Yes. So I really, what drives a lot of the story and the emotion is the music that's behind it.
Mm.
And so you really, making a documentary is very interesting because it's not like you at least have an idea when you go into it, but you don't have everything written when you go to shoot. You just ask people questions and then the story kind of comes out of that. And
it's a discovered story.
Yeah. And so as you discover that story and you hook into the right people with the right attitude, you put music behind that and that's what really drives it. So documentary is generally a little bit of a way to explain to people that we're not just a flyover. So it's got some attitude to it, and a lot of that's driven by the music. So when we did the original full film released in 2016, we had local hip hop group Doomtree do the music. So we had Dessa actually narrated it, did a wonderful job. But it was all about how do we present this attitude that we're not a flyover. We actually have a lot of really great stuff going on in this community. And you see that again and again with more and more articles coming out. More activity happening in this entrepreneurial ecosystem. We have these two programs from Techstars, one of few in the world that actually has multiple programs in a single market. Especially,
we have the Target Techstars, which is a Target as a retail accelerator.
Accelerator at Target, and then we have the Farm to Fork accelerator.
Farm to Fork.
So Farm to Fork is focused on everything from basically agriculture to food. So how do we make the crops and grow them and then distribute them in the supply chain, and then how are we getting that actually to the table at the restaurant?
Onto our fork.
Yep. So Farm to Fork is has I believe it's 9 companies that are involved in the supply chain from the farm to the fork.
And so, so it's like there are 9 steps between planting the seed and chewing?
Each of them is solving very interesting problems. So one is called Trade Lanes, and they are trying to find efficiency and more digital technology-focused ways to get containers, shipped. And there's still a lot of manual paperwork in that. So they are finding ways to create efficiencies with what is an otherwise extremely complex.
Because I'm hungry now. I want my food right away.
Right. So. Yeah. And a lot of this.
Get it to me.
And a lot of this, stuff goes around the world. Cargill is one of the biggest food companies in the planet.
Right. One of the.
And they, they feed a significant portion of the world, and they have a vested interest in making sure that they are innovating in ways to get their crops to other places.
Hmm. Boy, I'm anxious to see this film. I know your first film, which was basically about Minnesota's technology history and current events and maybe even to the future, but there's a lot of technology that it's so hard for the average person to put their head around, computers. Finally, we have computers, in our phones and on our desktops and laptops. But see, now you're talking food. I can relate to food. And in fact, that's one of the things. So I think, Monica, in your book, I think you have some food from Africa. Can you tell me, inform me? I'm ignorant about African food.
Yeah, so African food, it depends on where you find yourself. So if you go to the western part of Africa, where I come from, we share similar food. So if you go to Nigeria, if you go to Gambia, on the west coast, we share similar food. So you're going to have jollof. Jollof is like rice, but it's made with tomatoes. So the color changes from white rice to like a yellowish rice.
Mm.
It's very popular on the continent.
Also, did you bring any?
I can make you some.
it's sounding good.
It sounds good. It sounds really good. So that's one of the popular food when you go to the west coast. But if you go to the east side, you're going to have different food. You're going to have food like, with the Kenyans, they have food like Kigali. So that's made up of kind of a grain, kind of corn. So it's fermented over time and then it's made into a delicious food.
Gosh.
So there's different kinds of food that people like. So I said ugali, jollof rice, ankara, sambusa, is very popular here in the Somali community. So if you go to the eastern side of Africa, that's one food that they love.
So what's a sambusa?
Sambusa is kind of, I don't know how to explain that, but you didn't get some a Little Africa?
Oh, was it the the little wrapped?
Wrapped. That's
okay. The samosa, maybe it's also called.
Yes.
Yes, I did have one. I bought 2, one for my wife.
Yes, that's what I'm talking
about.
So
I would be a good husband. Samosa.
Yes.
So those are good.
So that's really popular too among Africans.
So because there are so many Somalians in town, we have a lot of Somali food.
Yes.
Are there many people from Ghana in the Twin Cities? Can you find Ghana food? Is there a Ghana restaurant?
There is no Ghana restaurant, but you can always have Ghanaian food at Ghanaian events. So that's where we have Ghanaian food. But if you go to Brooklyn Park, you're going to have a lot of Liberian food.
Liberian.
Yeah,
so
they also make jollof. So you can get jollof rice from Liberian and it's still good jollof rice.
Is Brooklyn Park Little Liberia?
I would say so. There's so many Liberians in Brooklyn Park, so you can say that.
Okay, gosh. See, I need to go to Brooklyn Park. We're talking about Africa
Brooklyn Boulevard. There's a lot of food.
Pre-World War II Europe. And
yes.
Gosh. So how did you happen to come to flyover country? How come you didn't go to the coasts?
Interesting.
America has New York and Los Angeles and maybe Chicago.
Popular places.
And Minneapolis.
And Minneapolis.
Yes, let's add Minneapolis to the list.
Why did you come here?
I came here for school. So I studied at St. Thomas, University of St. Thomas.
Oh, okay.
For my master's in public policy. In Ghana, I went to University of Ghana and I did political science. So that's what landed me here.
Okay.
It's been wonderful ever since.
You got politics here too. So, Roma, are you from Minnesota?
No. I'm originally from Mexico, and I came here to study at the University of Minnesota.
Gosh.
Received a master's degree in psychology and in music, and I love Minnesota because a lot of people don't know this, but Minnesota is like number two in the arts.
Really?
Outside of New York, in terms of per capita, Minneapolis is very rich in music, theater, art. So I'm just so happy to be here. I love Minnesota.
Boy, another reason not to fly over. You're listening to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. I'm Steve LeBeau, and we have three creative guests today. We have Roma Kalatayud.
Stocks.
Don't want to forget that because he'll get mad,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Nick Roseth and Monica Habia will be back right after this.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And welcome back to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air, talking about creativity. And we have at least a couple people that just landed here in the middle of nowhere in Minnesota. They missed New York somehow, and the plane dropped them off here to go to the University of Minnesota or the University of St. Thomas. So we have kind of the knowledge magnet here. So Nick, are you from here? Or are you?
Yep, born and raised in St. Paul.
Okay, so you're part of the homeborn magnet.
Yes.
You got attached. We're also here with Roma Kalatayud Stocks. There we
go.
Got that in. And Monica Habia. Minnesota is a different place. You mentioned you studied politics, Roma. What kind of political situation do we have in Ghana right now? I mean, is that an active, or is it as crazy as the United States?
No.
No.
So in Ghana, we have a very peaceful country. Ghana is one of the peaceful countries you can find in Africa, in West Africa. So yes, very peaceful. We have a democratic rule. We have governance every 4 years. So we have elections every 4 years, and then we change government as and when it's needed. So yeah, we have a peaceful country that people are always welcome to.
See, we don't hear about peaceful countries. It doesn't make the news.
Yes.
Peace broke out in Ghana today. You know, that's it's not a front page story.
We have very, Ghanaians are one of the peaceful people you can find. So we just lost Kofi Annan.
Right. That's right.
He's a Ghanaian.
And he came here to go to college too.
Macalester, yeah.
Right.
So,
I saw him once.
One of our stars.
Yeah. Talk over there, not far from where I live in St. Paul.
Perfect.
And Mexico, I mean, I know... they're getting along not too well with our president these days.
Well, I don't really want to talk about current politics, but I will be happy to talk about politics in this way. So the trilogy that I'm creating is a perspective of the 20th century. So
okay.
And I will come back to politics and where that fits in. And so there's three themes to all my stories. I'm currently working on the third novel, which is an ode to joy,
okay,
which will be the final
of Beethoven too.
Yes, it's the final of the trilogy. And so the themes are music and the arts. That's really important, as I mentioned earlier. The second theme is the politics of the era. And the reason for that, obviously, they're historical novels. So you have to discuss what's happening. What are some of the major events that are happening in the century? And thirdly is the philosophical inclination. So I was really interested when you're dealing with pre-World War II and you want to basically write a good story, how are you going to go about doing that? So obviously you have to present the history. But I was really interested in finding something uplifting to be able to tell in my second book, which is A Symphony of Rivals. And for that, I had the opportunity to interview Dr. Alexander White, who is actually a Holocaust survivor. He was on the Schindler's List. And I met with him a few years ago, and he wrote a book called Wie ein Mensch, which is a common Jewish phrase meaning be a person of honor, be a person of virtue. And I met with him this spring, just letting him know my book was coming out. But I really tapped into that kind of philosophy. So even though I do have to tap into this dark period in history, I wanted to do it in a way that the characters in the book and some of the stories in the book would surpass or would be able to deal with what was happening and maintain their integrity or maintain a good philosophy about life. I don't know if that kind of makes sense. So when I think of politics...
You didn't want just a big downer.
Right. And so when I think about politics, I think about diplomacy. I think about cultural diplomacy. So you could say that...
And I'm thinking, what is that anymore?
Okay. Well, cultural diplomacy, I mean, it's a new term, really. It's a new term, but it's been around. So cultural diplomacy is exchanging cultural ideas. But you see it more and more because I think that many countries are finding that the best way to tap or to communicate or to contact with people from another country is through culture, through music, through the arts.
Through food.
So that's what, through food.
Food,
through food, through sports. Through the culture. And so for me, kind of tapping into that kind of ideology of cultural diplomacy was a kind of way for me to do that through my novels, through the stories that I was telling, but always kind of keeping something positive in the forefront, despite obviously all the negativity that sometimes happens with certain ideologies or in certain times in history.
Right. Well, just to tie it to our reality a little bit, you can look at history, and as they say, you can find a lot of lessons that can be applied today. And it seems like in a lot of political arguments, usually someone, that they say there's almost a rule like Murphy's Law, and at some point, somebody will get called a Nazi, or, you know, that's like Hitler did something like that. So it's kind of the base level of how low can you go. Are there any parallels between pre-World War II Nazi Germany and America today?
Well, I was actually asked that question in a Q&A with Howard Lovey. And so my answer to that was I will let readers decide.
Oh.
When they read. No, this is why.
See, then you got to go buy the book. And
well,
you
no,
read
because
it and...
because it's the whole point. It's not up to me to tell people what they should
okay.
think.
So you grant the intelligence to the reader.
Right. They can decide. They can decide whether there are parallels or not, but it's not up to me. That is not my intention.
Okay.
That is not my intent.
So you didn't write your between the lines.
No, it's not my intent to do that. My intent is to present history as it was, and then readers can decide what they want to decide.
Okay. Now that's called diplomacy. Right?
Exactly. So I'm a good diplomat.
No. I love that approach. I'm a huge history buff, and I love all forms of different history. World War I and World War II are both extremely fascinating for me. I've read
yes.
many books on them, and those in between years were some of like the world's most interesting growing pains as it went, like as innovation and technology started to take hold, because at the beginning of the 20th century, you got the car, you got, you know, phones, you got a lot of things that started to really kind of click and come together. And then you had this massive, you had a massive kind of war in the First World War. And then that transition in the 20s and 30s, everything really changed. And you talk about, you know, the cultural diplomacy kind of, I think that it was almost like the world grew up a little bit as it was going through those times. So they were just naturally going to be full of turmoil and pain, but also a lot of beauty in there that gets kind of missed over. So I think with growth, you know, through pain comes growth. And so it's an interesting cultural context that you're creating and providing for the user alongside something that's positive, like music. I think of the movie The Pianist as a similar type of situation, which is the context of a human being that is going through this tremendously challenging time and the ability for them to maintain some of that humanity. There's also a great book, Man's Search for Meaning, is another great story about how somebody in the concentration camps was able to maintain his sense of self and his purpose here on this planet. Going through
who wrote that?
Viktor Frankl.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Wonderful book about why are we here as individuals? But it's a growth story, and it's a beautiful story of his survival based on who he is and his ability to help other people. Hmm. So I think that, you know, when we're talking about music, when we're talking about film or books or any of these things, I think so much of us are trying to use what we're here, you know, for as a purpose to kind of help push us all forward in some form or another. So I think that there's a lot of beauty in the power of story, which is kind of what we're all doing. We're all creating mm-hmm. some sense of story to try to help others be informed about either history or where we are now or something that is unknown. So I think that that's, you know, as pulling this back to Synapse and what you are trying to do to kind of pull people together in different contexts, I think it is through this story that we are able to create meaningful connections to other people. And when you have two groups in different silos, they don't have, you know, that cultural diplomacy that you're talking about, mm-hmm. which is, I don't know what your world looks like. I only know what my world looks like. And so here in America, you see that a lot with things like cities. Cities were created and it kind of had to, everybody had to kind of deal with the other people. And so you see a lot of, when you see isolation somewhere else, then you don't see people getting along and being very open to that. But if you're in Amsterdam, I was in Amsterdam a few weeks ago. I mean, there's everybody on this planet at some point goes through Amsterdam. You see every
culture. Because that's where the air hub is, right?
You see every culture. You see every type of person. And this goes back, you know, 500 plus years that they were an epicenter and they were culturally open to the entire world. So I just wanted to add in that context that I think it's really interesting of how these stories help us learn more about each other, which helps us become more open to conversations and embracing other people on this planet that might not be like us.
Right, because one of our universals are stories, and but then it's like who determines the narrative? That's you got the power play. And I know something that happened after World War II was all the colonies in Africa started getting their independence. So there's, you know, who was writing the story of Africa for a couple hundred years, right? Who was the, I assume there was a colonizer for Ghana.
Yeah.
Which country?
Great Britain.
Great Britain. So, hey, same here. They colonized us. We can agree on that one.
And, you know, I think that we are also kind of living in a time, or at least I'm hoping, at least for me, is the art, creating the stories, as you alluded to. It's really about coming together. It's not about creating divisions. I really want to emphasize that because I feel that there's already too many divisions because of politics.
Divisions, right.
And for me, this is where I feel that art and the film and music and all of these artistic endeavors, food, culture, this is the one thing that brings everybody together. I mean, for instance, last month, the Minnesota Orchestra launched their tour to South Africa to commemorate the centennial celebration of the birth of Mandela.
Uh-huh.
And guess what symphony they used? They used Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, which I actually talk about a lot in my book.
So they're helping set up your third
book.
Yes,
yes. But what's really nice about that symphony is that symphony was inspired by a poem by Schuller, which is about bringing people together, is that we are all children of the same, whether you call it God or spiritual world, whatever, we're all together in this. And today, and this is what I meant earlier about being transcendental, so here we are, you know, several hundred years later after Beethoven was born and he composes music, and here we are still using his music, you know, to bring cultures together. Now the Minnesota Orchestra is traveling all through South Africa on this tour to celebrate that. And so here we are, again, transcending periods, transcending people. So I think it's we are living in that time that there's a lot of us that are very much aware of that and want to create that change.
Well, I remember years ago I was interviewing an African musician from, I think he's from the Congo, Rochereau. You ever heard of him? He was from a French-speaking country, so I had to ask him, you know, through a translator, who were your musical influences? And so he goes, this part didn't need a translator. Ray Charles, Elvis Presley, Frank Sinatra. It's like, so it goes back and forth. So who did you listen to growing up? Did you listen to much American music? Is American culture in Ghana at all?
Well, the music is there. Yeah, American music is there, but personally, I listen to local music, so Ghanaian music, and I also listen to West African music. So if you go to Nigeria, we had Fela Kuti and all these great people that produce great music.
Sunny Ade?
Yes, yes. So the sort of music that I listen to. And sometimes listen to Sari Aboria. Yeah. So good music from the West and
so it goes back. Sunny Ade, he was also at First Avenue a couple times back, starting in the 80s.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
It was interesting that he used kind of a slide guitar, which we kind of associate with blues, but it actually came from Hawaii. And so apparently the sailors would circulate all their different musical styles, and I think it went to Lagos and then infiltrated into Nigeria for Sunny Ade.
Yeah, thinking about that, actually when I was in Ghana this past trip, one of my vision is to explore musical instruments into a book. So that is going to be my next project. So talking about music, bringing people together.
Maybe you two can collaborate.
that would be great. So we're thinking, you know, with Dr. T. Katarina, that was what we're talking about for our next project, to probably a children's book to introduce children to music and musical instruments that has really impacted music throughout Africa and the world. So that would be our next project.
I was wondering, why did you write a children's book when you work at a college level?
Yes,
right?
I work at a college level.
So you got to get them young. You got to train
them. Yes,
we got to
get them very young. So the children's book, I think, is because we, as you say, we have to get them young. And we were thinking about the fact that the older people can definitely read about them or go online and stuff like that. But then we also thought about how colorful can it be for children. So if you look at the book, the book is really colorful and it's really like, so we work with this illustrator from London. So you can imagine just from two different worlds.
From the colonizer.
from two different worlds. So Rihanna is, we didn't meet her. We just worked over the mill, and then that we have a book, a very powerful book that is very colorful. So I think that is why we use a children's book to get the message to the kids as early as possible.
I thought that was an African instrument right there. What instrument was that?
Take a new kind of music.
Digital music.
I just wanted to add it for your research. You should check out the Museum of Musical Instruments in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Okay.
Because they really have every conceivable musical instrument that you can think of.
I would definitely
it's there from Africa, from everywhere in the world.
Sounds perfect.
Boy, we're here talking with three creators. And when you write a book, and I have some familiarity with that, or create a movie, usually you have like 10 times more material than you actually use. And so it's a big matter of sifting out. I'm sure in your novel you had, well, we could have them take a hike in the mountains. Well, no, then that would turn into this, and we have to cut out that hike. And for the Techstars Food to Fork, well, we could have to choose between three different companies in our supply chain. Which one are we going to use? There's a lot of dividing. And then you had to pick Amazing Africa A to Z. You only picked one per letter of the alphabet.
Yes.
Now we have three things that start with G. Which one shall we do?
I know.
Let's go greatness. I mean,
yes.
The art is basically making a lot of decisions.
It is making a lot of decisions. I remember the first piece was like a lot. And then we actually wanted to downsize because we didn't want the children to have a lot to think about, like three different things to have on one letter. So that's how come we chose one per each letter. But going forward, we're going to work on, like, for example, Amazing Algeria. So that's a country in Africa. Talk about that in extensive way. So Amazing Ghana, Amazing Nigeria, talk about different countries. So that will be like a next step to this one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're going to get back to more amazing facts and figures
right.
when we return to Synapse Think Tank of the Air.
Synapse Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back once again with Synapse Think Tank of the Air, talking with Roma Kalatayud Stocks. That must be your husband's name, Stocks.
Yes.
Right? Gotta say that.
Local.
Although your name is much more musical than his.
Yes.
Stocks are kind of...
That's why I kept it.
Rocks, locks. Who wrote Symphony of Rivals, a novel that's just out. And we have with us Monica Habia, who co-wrote a book with Artika Tyner, both over at the University of St. Thomas, Amazing Africa A to Z. So it's a children's book, which means that I can read it. And then we have with us Nick Roseth, who made a big splash a couple years back with the original documentary film about Minnesota's tech world and kind of a tech subculture. And now you're doing a sub-subculture. Even within the tech world, there's the world of food to fork and the tech stars. Now, I don't think of food and farming as a tech thing, but is it? Where are the digits?
Yeah, it's becoming more and more leveraging technology, because I think that there's so much that has to happen for you to get that plate at the restaurant or in your kitchen. And what's super interesting is to kind of explore what companies like Cargill or Ecolab or other, you know, General Mills and some of these other great food and ag powerhouses that we have here, what they do to make it happen. And so I think technology is more and more getting leveraged down at the farm level, where you have farms now leveraging things like drones to make sure that their fields are going to be, you know, properly irrigated, and you know, there's a man
water drones
that monitor a lot of different variables from the air.
They can so they see what needs water.
They can take pictures.
They don't.
They can produce.
Dump a bunch of water.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, but if you know, because of the growing number of people on the planet, because of a changing climate, there are certainly a lot of challenges. Farming is, you know, kind of one of the original forms of entrepreneurship. And so there's a lot of variables, and it's tough. So technology is being used in a variety of ways to help make it easier for farmers to do what they need to do. And then technology is also in logistics. How do we get this food from point A to point B? And then, you know, whatever needs to be done with that food to get it to your plate. So it's documentary is very much focused on technology, but also entrepreneurship. And so that's the big piece for me, is the entrepreneurial ecosystem here is extraordinarily helpful. I think it's surprising to many folks outside of and even inside of Minnesota to see all of this activity happening here.
Is it growing?
Absolutely. I'd say the food and...
Well, I know the food is growing, but I guess... I know the plants grow, but I mean, are there more entrepreneurs than ever?
Yes, absolutely. If you think about, we go back and forth with number one or number two in Fortune 500s per capita mm-hmm. in the country. So we have a lot for the number of people that we have. And I think that has created a lot of great management schools that help people navigate the ladders in those big companies. But I also see this wave of entrepreneurship coming through in the past, 5 years, where more and more people are taking risks, which is not a typical Minnesota culture. We kind of, especially with our, big towers, we have safe places to work, and you can create a good life at those companies. But I think more and more you're starting to see more people have their own ideas and feel the support inside of the community where they can start a business.
What about the funding mechanisms? I mean, what I've always heard is that if you're just starting out, good luck. But once you've made it a few steps on the road, then you might attract some attention because of that same conservative streak.
Yeah, the funding climate here continues to be a challenge. It always, I think it has been. But, you know, a good friend of mine, you know, had said, you know, if you've got a good idea and you there's a way to find money, certainly early stage capital, there are more organizations coming together and more ways to support. The starting costs are coming down. You don't necessarily need to sign a 7-year lease when you've got WeWork across the street here or Fueled Collective. We have now, I think, north of 20 different co-working spaces here in the Twin Cities.
Right. That's which kind is, of a rather new phenomenon.
Right. That's like that's in the last like 5 to 6 years. So the startup costs are coming down. Technology is a huge component to that because it's easier to reach customers. And when you are part of a community where you feel that support from other entrepreneurs and you can hear those stories, I think that's very empowering. So part of what we, you know, the mission of Documentary is to expose people to the reality that that's happening here, even if it's hard to see.
Right.
And then also to inspire other people to maybe go start a business or at least find organizations where they can plug in and create that awareness so they know that they can go to a mini demo and see entrepreneurs get up on stage, show their product,
you need to work with Monica here and do a children's version.
There you go.
So we can start thinking entrepreneurial even in the lower grades because
yeah.
I forget what percentage of workers now work for themselves.
And the gig economy is very real, and more people are finding ways to exist through contracting and as individuals or solopreneurs or...
Roma, are you a solopreneur? Being an author, that's entrepreneurial.
It is because, I mean, it all comes with an idea and then you set yourself out, you know, study, research. You were talking about research earlier and research is probably one of my favorite things to do, you know, because you get to learn so much. I mean, you're talking about some of the industries here that are very important. I mean, you go back 100 years and Minnesota was founded on the flour mills, you know, and Pillsbury. So you have to have that kind of history also in your stories because
the research helps you procrastinate so you don't have to write yet because you're spending so much time working. I can't write now because...
Well, sometimes you do it in conjunction because sometimes you do have the information, but then you sit down and then you get this idea and then you go back and then it's kind of fun sometimes that things that you were thinking about kind of happen in history. You know, that kind of happens too. There's a little bit of that interesting thing happening.
So is this your day job or do you have a different day job?
Well, this is my day job, but I do a lot of volunteer work for arts organizations.
Oh.
And I'm really interested, again, you know, you're talking about getting kids younger.
Right.
And one of the organizations that I'm affiliated with is Vocal Lessons.
Oh.
And Vocal Lessons, the founder, Philip Brunel, he's very well known in the Twin Cities, and he started a program that's called Cantare. And this is about bringing composers from Mexico every year.
Hey.
And they work with the schools, with elementary schools and with high schools in the Twin Cities. They compose music for these kids. And what's amazing at the end of the year, at the end of the school cycle year, is to see kids from all over the Twin Cities, but not just kids that are locally from Minneapolis, by kids that maybe come from Somalia, kids that come from Mexico, from Latin America, and they're all singing together. So I think there is a really important element, Monica, to get kids, to get this education to the kids when they're young.
Do you go actually read your book to the kids, Monica?
Yeah I did. Actually, so our book came out like 2 weeks before I went to Ghana. So my first one was with Freedom School in Minneapolis, Park Avenue Freedom School. It was awesome. So the kids love it. I remember one of the kids was like, I had jollof. So I realized that the kids can relate to the book. But we're going to have a lunch party here in Minneapolis on October 6th.
October 6th
at Daybreak's Bookstore. Day Breaks is on Washington Avenue, right off the U of M. It's a bookstore that is by a St. Thomas student.
Oh.
Yeah, so a fellow Tommy. Yeah, so we'll be there too. So we are inviting everybody to come join us on October 6th, Daybreak Bookstore. We have the kids come around. We're going to read the books. We have some things to share from Ghana and all over the continent.
Well, you mentioned there's 54 countries in Africa. I mean, I imagine there's some schisms among the different countries, but is this a book like this, let all the African children get together, the sons and daughters of immigrants? Is this a universal African?
Yeah, it's a universal book. So at the back of the book, you're going to have where we have the continents and the countries and everything. So you get to learn about each other. So yes, so it's a universal book that can be used by anybody from the continent.
I also want to invite people to my book lunch. It's actually the official public book lunch of A Symphony of Rivals. And that's happening at Barnes & Noble at the Galleria in Edina on September 10th.
Wow, we got to write these down. So
at 6:30 p.m. And there'll be appetizers and refreshments. And then I'll have a discussion and book signing. So everybody is welcome to come and they can check it out.
Well, that's great.
Go to my website too.
So, Nick, you don't have a book. You have a movie. Are you having an official launch, or is it just leaked out on the web?
So it's out on the web. You can go find it at documentary.com. So documentary.com. And we are doing a launch. So it is a three-part series. And so first episode's out now. The second episode should be out sometime in September. And then the final episode will actually be released at an event immediately after mini demo at Twin Cities Startup Week.
Oh, okay. What date?
So that is going to be, and I should
know it's
this.
Between October 7th and 14th.
It is October 11th.
Very good. Okay.
October 11th at 9 p.m. And it's really cool because it's going to be at the, I believe it's the Southview Theater, Riverview Theater.
Oh, in South Minneapolis.
Yep. So that's they have this huge screen, so it's going to be really cool. So the full thing is going to be about, let's say, 25 to 30 minutes, and then we'll get up and talk a little bit about it. So we'll actually be releasing the third episode at that. So we'll play the entire
series. Episode release party.
Yes.
Well, that sounds fun.
So that's one of the things of marketing. I mean, here we have, in the digital age, we have two people doing books. I mean, they thought books were going to die. I remember 20 years ago, they were saying, well, who would ever want to carry a book around when you can have a digital book? Did you ever worry about that?
No, because honestly, I mean, there's advantages to everything. There's pluses and minuses. So one of the pluses I think of technology is, you know, when I think about, for instance, with my book, obviously you can get any book, but now with the technology, I can actually provide readers with the music, you know, by tapping into my website, by tapping to iTunes. By the way, my website is romastocks.com. So, I mean, I had to say, in case people want to know where to go to.
Romastocks?
Romastocks.com.
You jumped past your name?
Well, because I think for people writing it might have gotten complicated, and Romastocks is an easy thing to remember. So, but I think technology does allow us, it gives us more opportunity. It gives us a lot more opportunity to look at different media at the same time.
Well, are you going to record an audiobook?
I'm hoping. And in fact, I have a really nice story. I think that there is market for everyone. But one story that I've never forgotten that has to do with my first book. The first one was A Song in My Heart. And there, I was doing a book signing event at Barnes & Noble, and this kid, you know, like 17 years old, he came over and he just said, you know, I just had the opportunity to read and play the music for my grandmother, who could no longer read, but she could listen. So I think that technology only gives us more options for everybody. I don't think it takes away from the books.
Okay, solid. Yeah, you second that, Monica?
Yeah, my second thing was that, so this book was written through Planting People, Growing Justice. It's a nonprofit here in Minnesota, St. Paul. We work on literacy and leadership education. So this is headed by Dr. Atika Tyner.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have a community of celebration on September 22nd at Highland Park Senior High School. So that's our annual event for Planting People, Growing Justice to fundraise for the work that we do with the children's book, with everything else that we do in the community. So we're helping, urging everybody to come out to celebrate with us at Highland Park, September 22nd.
Hmm. So I noticed, I assume all of these works of art that you've created, it's not just art for art's sake. I mean, here you're doing a book on Africa for art for education's sake, hopefully to build a more informed and harmonious population out there. Right. And the Farm Tech, not Farm Tech, but the Techstars Farm to Fork. I assume, Nick, that part of all of your work is to help push things forward so that the tech world grows faster.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about building awareness, and it's about kind of appreciating what it is that we have here and making sure that people know about it so that we can hopefully continue to grow that community and having them be a part of it. I think Minnesotans have this very incredible and unique culture here that we all have a very much a giving mentality. And that's one of the really cool things about this community. And so it's a great community to be a part of, and to participate in that community. So, the kind of the three words that I used is to, participate, celebrate, and advocate. And so those words mean a lot to me. And so that's part of what we're doing with documentary is I participated in the community, and then I celebrated and then became an advocate for it.
Well, I was at the launch of your original movie, documentary, and the audience was like a huge tribe.
It's very much
I think everyone you interviewed was in the audience, and yes. Then all their friends and family and other techies were there.
It's a very close community, very supportive. Everybody kind of knows everybody, and that's one of the really great things about it is that, you know, you have friends, you have support, and you have people that are doing this with you.
And then to move on. And then I had we're running out of time, but I had one question for you, Roma. You wrote, and the heroine, the protagonist of your book, is that autobiographical?
Thank you for asking that question, because it's not. Okay.
Oh.
Well. Here's the thing about it's they're novels. Okay, they're historical novels. And recently, I'm going to paraphrase, but I think that if you really want to engage readers, you sometimes have to go beyond your own experience. So I'm not going to say, of course, I've been inspired by things that I've seen. Of course, the one thing we have in common, of course, is the music. But beyond that, it was necessary for me to go beyond my own experience to engage readers with situations that, you know, this is pre-World War II. So, I mean, I wasn't there, but I could maybe think about what it would have been. And
you
for me, it was
just imagine.
No, for me is to the goal is for me to put the reader into the story and think so that they can think what they would do in difficult situations, because this is how you really measure character. So okay, it's well, not
so when we measure the character, we're not going to measure your character.
No, because I don't bring in my character to that. I might bring in my preferences, but I don't bring in my character to
that. Okay, well, thanks for joining us
today.
But
thank you for that question.
Oh, you bet. Roma Kalatayud-Stocks, who wrote The Symphony of Rivals. And thank you, Monica Habia, for Amazing Africa A to Z. And thank you, Nick Roseth, for Techstars Farm to Fork, being released in three segments, kind of like a three-course meal.
Yes, there you go.
Okay. Very nice.
Well, thank you for joining us here on Synapse Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back next week.
Thank you for listening to Synapse Think Tank of the Air. I'm Leo Espinosa.